Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. With repeal of the state's casino law on the ballot this November, Massachusetts is ground zero in the push to expand or stop the spread of legalized gambling in America. It's an interesting moment for legal gaming across the country. A couple of decades ago, the industry had homes only in Nevada and Atlantic City. Today, 39 states allow legalized gambling. And one man, Frank Fahrenkopf, can take a lot of credit for that impressive expansion. For 18 years during that period, he was president and CEO of the American Gaming Association, the industry's national trade group. He stepped down last year and has just begun a fellowship at the Harvard Institute of Politics. Frank Fahrenkopf is also the former chair of the Republican National Committee, and he joins us now from Harvard to talk about gambling and the push to expand it here in Massachusetts. And Frank Fahrenkopf, welcome to the program. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm great. It's good that I can be with you.
You know, I'd love to talk to you about sort of where gambling was and the perception of gambling was when you first came aboard the American Gaming Association, because you worked really hard to sort of change the perception of gambling. So bring us back to those early years. How was
it? Yeah, I mean, I became the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association in 1995. And within 1 week of opening the office for the first time, the movie Casino came out. So I immediately ran into some difficulties. But what we tried
Casino,
to establish—
Casino, of course, just for people who didn't see it, it's sort of, I mean, it looks at essentially the links of organized crime in the gaming industry, and it's a big, exciting, sort of sexy movie that perhaps doesn't reflect well on the gaming industry.
No, it was certainly not something that the public relations people for any of the casinos would like to have had done.
Yeah.
But anyway, my effort was to show that the gaming industry in this country, and by the way, it's not 39 states have casinos, but 48 of the 50 states have some form of legal gambling. It is only Utah and Hawaii that have no form of legal gaming whatsoever. And what we tried to establish is that the gaming industry today is like every other industry. We make investments, we produce jobs, we develop tax revenue. But we're a little unique from every other in that we only go where we're invited. There's no right to have a casino license. We either come into a state when we're invited. I say we. I shouldn't say that. I have no connection with the industry for the last year and a half. It's an old habit, I think.
Sure. Well, I understand. Two decades, old habits die hard, right?
They do. But we either come in by way of legislative action or at the ballot box.
Sure.
And so I have no problem whatsoever with the people of Massachusetts going to the polls and making a determination whether or not they want to agree with what the legislature did some time past. I mean, that's sort of the basic nature of the industry. It's also an industry that's unusual in that we want tough regulation and appropriate law enforcement oversight.
Well, I'm going to get to that in a second, but I want to stick with Massachusetts, and I'm really glad you brought that up because obviously, you know, despite this expansion, as you know, casinos remain controversial in some quarters. And we've heard from opponents many times on this show, and they'll say things like it leads to addiction, that it drains money from people's pockets, that it preys on people who can least afford it, that and other problems. What's your quick pitch for why Massachusetts voters should vote no on whether to repeal the state's gaming law in November?
Well, you know, I don't have a dog in the fight up here. And I'm no longer, as I said, directly connected with the industry. I mean, fundamentally, over the years that I was involved, there was always an element opposed to gaming. Well, the polls would indicate that 80 to 85% of the American people have no problem with gaming for themselves and others. It's a hardcore 15% who are opposed to all forms of gaming. Maybe 10% of that comes from the religious community, particularly Methodists, who have as a tenet of their religion that gaming is a sin and that everyone should do everything in their power to prevent people from gaming. And I understand that. I respect it. I don't agree with it, but I respect it. But the argument, they never make the argument on morality grounds. It's always an argument, well, because they know they'll lose that. The American people don't want anyone else telling them what they ought to be doing from a moral standpoint. And so they've tried to switch it to an economic one. We know, though, historically now, for 25 years, it's about 1% of the population that meet the requirements of the American Psychiatric Association as pathological gamblers. We know that people will, if they are pathological gamblers, they've got a problem. They'll commit crimes and families will break up. We know that. That's why the industry, with my direction at the time, created the National Center for Responsible Gaming. For years, the headquarters has been here in Boston. But what I always – and I went around the country. I never went into a state and said, you should do this or not do it. I always went to just offer commentary and leave that to the people. And I often quoted my old boss, Ronald Reagan, who said, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. You don't have to trust anymore. You can go into other jurisdictions that have had gaming and have faced what Massachusetts is facing. Talk to the chief of police. Talk to the social welfare people and find out whether or not these things are going to happen. And I like to point to Iowa. Iowa did something very, very interesting when they approved. Now, I'm not talking about Las Vegas or New Jersey. I'm talking about Iowa. Iowa said that every 8 years, the voters will get to go to the polls in those counties. It was a county option thing in Iowa. And vote whether to keep gaming or not keep gaming. And the same arguments were made. Well, they've been three times they went, and by 70 to 80% margins, decided to keep it. Now, if all these terrible things were going to happen, would the people of Iowa have considered to keep something that would be so disastrous, as the critics say? You know, I don't think so. You can look at what's happened in Pennsylvania, which is, you know, a northeastern state. So, but, I mean, it's up for everyone to make their own decisions.
Right,
and I'm
and
not here to tell people in Massachusetts they ought to approve this or not approve it.
No.
Just try to lay the facts out.
No, and of course, the voters are going to have their say in just a few weeks. But let me ask you this. I mean, yesterday, you mentioned the movie Casino, and yesterday we learned that some of the landowners in Everett, where Wynn Resorts won the right to build the Boston area's first casino, were indicted. They're accused of concealing the involvement of a convicted felon with connections to organized crime when they sold the land to Wynn. Now, of course, these are allegations. They're indictments. But opponents are seizing on this as an example of just what's wrong with gaming, that it's often linked to a corrupt culture, will lead to crime, corruption, and so on. I'd love your response to those concerns.
Well, all I know is what I read in the newspaper this morning, so I don't know any of the facts, but I understand those people were here before Steve Wynn, or before any discussion of the gaming industry. I don't think there's any direct relationship to what they did and gaming writ large. I don't think you can make that connection. I think that it's my understanding that the Gaming Commission did its job as it was doing the background work here. There were suspicions, turned it over to law enforcement, and they cracked down on these people. But I don't think you can directly connect what happened with the gaming industry as a whole. And I think, again, that's why you don't have to just rely on go to Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
go to Iowa. You know, go to these states, Missouri, go to these states, and you'll see that it has not happened. These dire things that everyone predicts the sky is going to fall just don't happen, or those states would not still have it. So trust but verify.
Trust but verify. Let me ask you a little bit about what we're seeing in Atlantic City. Of course, casinos brought lots of jobs and prosperity there. But now, despite efforts to revive the industry, I think four casinos have shut down recently. What happened in Atlantic City, in your view, and what lessons does that offer, perhaps for a state like Massachusetts that is considering heading down this road?
Yeah, it's a tragedy of Atlantic City. It really actually happened. I mean, Atlantic City was a mess long before gaming came. Gaming was approved by the voters in 1976. The first casinos opened in 1978. But what happened was the state legislature, after the vote was taken and the first casinos opened, all the tax revenue went into the general fund. And if you know anything about politics in New Jersey, the collar counties around New York, they took the money. No money was really plowed back in to improve Atlantic City. When Christy Whitman became governor, she kind of turned that around a little bit. And I used to go up there and talk to the business people in that community for years and years. Say, you have to upgrade. You have to upgrade. This place is not something that's going to attract people to come. You've got sort of a monopoly now, really, until the opening of the Indian casinos in Connecticut. There really was no competition. And they just didn't do what they should have done. Unfortunately for Atlantic City, in 2008, they did have things going in the right direction. New projects mm-hmm. were on the drawing boards. And then, as we know, the world's economic facilities collapsed, and they never have been able to recover it. And then the big thing for Atlantic City was Pennsylvania having gaming. Pennsylvania is now the second largest revenue state in the country after Nevada. Tremendous tax revenues in the state of Pennsylvania. And now the people who live in Philadelphia don't have to drive an hour and a half down that causeway to Atlantic City they can gamble at home. And Atlantic City didn't really prepare for what was going to happen. Well, so it's a tragedy, and people the tragedy is the people who are out of work. That's the difficulty.
Sure. Well, let me ask you about, you know, you mentioned the Indian casinos here in Connecticut, and with legalized gambling on the rise and it expanding across New England, some suggest that maybe this market is close to saturated already. We've already seen declining revenues, at least at one of those Indian casinos in a big way in Connecticut. Is there a risk of oversaturation?
There's always a risk. I use this analogy. My office for years in Washington was two blocks from the White House. I could go a block east, west, south, north, and there was either a Starbucks or a Pete's or you know, coffee shops all over. Now, when the market gets to the point where they start closing, when there's too many Starbucks, I mean, I haven't seen it yet. Now, here, there's no question. I can point to two places in the United States, one that's very dear to me, which is my old home, the Reno-Lake Tahoe area of Nevada, which is never recovered from Native American casinos on the other side of the Sierra Nevada Mountains in Sacramento, along the highways going up to Reno and Carson City and Lake Tahoe, were just devastated, particularly in the wintertime when you had to put snow tires on to go over those mountains. And the other was Atlantic City with the Philadelphia market. Now, there's a little difference, however, I think, Anthony, when you're talking about Massachusetts. And the reason is that Massachusetts for years has had the highest percentage of residents who gambled. They either went down to Rhode Island or they went down to Connecticut to the Indian casinos or played the lottery. I think the lottery is the richest lottery in the world. I remember being on a panel some years ago with Father McGowan. I think is he at BC? I think. And he was an expert in this area. So you have a lot of people in this state who like to gamble. Mm-hmm. And they're going to gamble. They may not, if they can't gamble here, they're going to continue to go to Connecticut and Rhode Island. And that tax revenue is going to be lost. And the jobs and economic development that might come about of Steve Wynn building an integrated resort will be lost.
All right. Well, that's Frank Fahrenkopf. He's a fellow now at the Harvard Institute of Politics, and he served as head of the Gaming Association for the American Gaming Association for 18 years. Frank Fahrenkopf, appreciate your perspective on this and your long experience in this industry. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Pleasure being with you, Anthony.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, Haitian-born, Boston-raised rapper Dutch Rebel. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.